beings, or as you, the creative people on earth, you, our sole purpose, or it is naturally driven that, you know, we innovate. The reason about over the period of time since Industrial Revolution, we have progressed a lot. We have done some great work in different fields, telecommunication, science, medicine, which has helped us to progress, which has helped us to sustain. But at the same time, if we look behind, if we look in hindsight, it has had a very severe impact on the ecosystem, which is where my journey comes in. So I graduated in 2007 from Narsimhanji. I've studied my Bachelor of Management Studies. I got recruited by KPMG, which is one of the world's largest consultancy firms. My role was to advise board of directors and businessmen and the big guys, the CEO and the CFOs, on risk and strategy. The vertical that I focused on was metals and mining. What it gave me is it gave me an opportunity to travel the world, and I traveled the biggest of mines in India and Africa. But every so my basic role as a mining company electrolysis process, and the output is copper, zinc, gold, etc., all different kind of metals. But every time I stood next to a mine, there was something eating inside me. I just realized that what a one-way system we have with Mother Nature. We were just taking, we were just taking. So there is something stirring inside me. I just realized that there is no mechanism to give back. We have a very one-way relationship with nature, which is where the idea of ecocentric came in. And which is where I realized that one of the largest streams where this natural resources is consumed is electronics.
Motherboards being burned for copper. And yet, this toxic waste is hope for many of these people. Most recycling in India, whether e-waste or municipal waste, is done by what is called the informal sector. People who are self-employed and who pick up waste and trade in it. Almost 90% of the jobs in India lie in the informal sector, and 95% of all electronic waste is recycled by such people. The integrated circuit boards find their way to small units. Here, gas blowtorches are used to melt the leaded solder. Later, a few hard knocks with a hammer take apart the ICs, condensers, and transistors. These components contain copper and even small quantities of gold. This work harms the recycler. He is likely to be exposed to dangerous flame retardants, which are suspected to damage growth and cause reproductive harm. The lanes to the units are littered with charred fiberglass from integrated circuit boards, polyvinyl chloride from wire cabling, copper dust, and other unidentified materials. Polyvinyl chloride produces hydrogen chloride gas when it's burned. This gas comes in contact with moisture and forms hydrochloric acid, which burns the respiratory tissues. Here, they are sorting and scrubbing circuit boards with diluted acid. The boards were later soaked in vats of acid for nearly 2 days. Finally, they were burned and dried in the sun. Some of the women manually removed the last layers of copper. Mohammad Asif, who owns a godown in in lane number 2 buys and dismantles monitors.
Monitor India se kaafi aata, USA se, Malaysia se.
Asset employs 5 children between the ages of 11 to 16. Walking down the lane, we spoke to Danish, Kamal and Kishan. They were hard at work, but as always, welcoming of us. Danish worked as we spoke to him, his cousins and friends all watching. He stood with an acquired ease on mounds of lead-coated broken glass from the monitors he was smashing. So Danish, Kamal and Kishan, this is a question of their everyday survival. They do not have the luxury of thinking about the toxic dust they get covered in or of lost opportunities. They do not think about carrying the burden of recycling machines used and abandoned by the world's privileged. They do not spend time thinking of electronics manufacturers with mushrooming sales who have not taken the responsibility for the hazardous chemicals put into these products, or concern about what happens to them at the end of their useful life. The work they do will expose them to all the chemicals that the EU has banned and the US is working to restrict for the safety of its children. Unfortunately, they are not the children of such societies. They live and work in forgotten pockets, pawning their futures. Three things are possible in this world of e-recycling. The government can declare it illegal and shut the units down. Over 25,000 people will lose their jobs in the Delhi region alone. Or the manufacturers of computers and mobile phones can acknowledge that they owe these people an overdue debt. They could help them upgrade into organized, safer businesses. Also ensure no e-waste is exported here and make less toxic products, or everyone can ignore them. In that case, we will continue exploiting the poverty and circumstances of these recyclers. Think about these choices the next time you log on.
So if you look at an electronic device, it's nothing but a piece of equipment which contains glass, precious metal, heavy metal and some hazardous substances. It is this presence of hazardous substances that possesses potential harm to the environment. Now if you look at India, so the last couple of years we have been boasting about the India story, we have been boasting about the growth, we've been boasting about a lot of things. With growth comes consumption. Consumption automatically leads to waste generation. So when I was talking about the mining sector, electronics is one stream of industry. Consolidated, it is the largest industry. It's a $1 trillion industry globally. It is the largest industry that is present today. Bigger than automobiles and bigger than telecommunication. So what is electronic waste? Electronic waste, simply put, is the waste that is generated once an electronic device becomes obsolete. So if you look at the way the global shift has happened, the first wave happened when the production moved from US to Japan. The second wave led the production or manufacturing from Japan to Southeast Asian countries. Then it went to China, and now we are seeing a sudden splurge in a lot of companies interested in setting up shop in India. As you must have read these figures over the last couple of months, especially after BJP has come in power, Foxconn, OnePlus, Xiaomi, and a lot of these electronic manufacturing companies have decided to set up shop here. What it primarily means is the kind of waste they will be generated will be enormous. To put a few things in perspective, India, we generate 1.7 million tons of electronic waste every year, out of which only 5% is forwarded to the formal sector. What it basically means that, so in fact, I was having a very interesting conversation and I would like to share the same example. The problem is not the scrap dealer network. The problem is the way they recycle it. The beauty about a country like India is that you throw a bottle of water outside your window, within 20 minutes a rag picker will come and pick it up. That is how phenomenal system that we have. But the problem is that once they have taken back, there are women and children who are employed to recycle this waste, which is where technology in India, if you must have paid attention to the video, the number quoted was 25,000. In India, we employ close to 3 lakh women and children in this particular space. So out of 1.7 million tons, only 5% is given to the formal sector, which includes companies like ours. However, 95% is forwarded to the scrap dealer network. So this is the problem that we are talking about. Going back a few slides, this is the kind of generation of electronic waste. Like I said, in the next couple of years, the India story looks very glory, but we should stop and understand what are we generating in our backyard. So if you look at the breakup in India, the waste generation breakup, top 10 states contribute to 70% of the total waste generated. Top cities are Mumbai, Delhi, NCR, Bangalore, Chennai, Kolkata, Ahmedabad, Hyderabad and Pune. Top 8 states that generate electronic waste, Maharashtra again is number one here, Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh, Uttar Pradesh, Delhi, Gujarat, Karnataka, West Bengal. Also, I'm sure all of us, we understand that when we talk about the rural population, we have not even seen consumption there. So there was a study and it says that the good thing is that there is connectivity. Most of our rural population has a mobile phone. But if you look at an urban population, we have a phone, we have a desktop, we have a lot of other electronic gadgets. Now, electronic waste includes all electronic and electrical things, tube light, wires, cables, electronic waste that is generated from automobile. So as in India as a whole, once we start consuming a lot of electronic waste, you can imagine the waste generation. So the estimate is we'll be generating 8 million tons of electronic waste in the next 5 to 7 years. So this is where a company like ours come into the picture.
At Ecocentric, once the vehicle reaches the plant, the material is unloaded in front of a security personnel. The security personnel then cross-checks the total quantity with the gate pass received from the company. All data is also recorded in a register at the security desk. Material is then tagged for identification and taken to the dismantling table for the manual dismantling process. This is the first step of the process where equipment is tested for consistency and to check if there is any data in the equipment.
We have a very high focus on data safety and destruction, which is a very primary concern for everyone today. Probably we have computers coming in, the hard disks are decoded, the data might be are damaged and then it goes for further processing.
With the advancement of technology, size of monitors is reducing day by day. Therefore, it is viable for companies to purchase smaller, lighter and more energy efficient monitors. At the EMPL facility, we have processes where we can separate the front and the back portion of the CRT monitor. The tube at the back is lead coated and hence is hazardous. The front portion is glass and is to be handled carefully. Tube lights and CFLs are processed in the CFL crushing machine, where glass, aluminium plugs and mercury are segregated and further processed. Safety of employees and security and access is of key concern.
So in a recycling plant, what we do is, again, the stress here is on the hazardous component that is there in a particular electronic device. If I have to take an example of a tube light contains mercury, has glass and has aluminium plugs. So we've got machinery where what it does is it will segregate the glass, the mercury will be absorbed in carbon filter and aluminium plugs are segregated. So a recycler's job is to ensure that once a particular electronic waste or electronic equipment is received, how it is dismantled and segregated into different components. Each of these components then is further processed and has its own life cycle. So right now what we do is we give it to the TSDF, which is a treatment storage disposal facility by the government. But having said that, we are also working on our own technology where we can reuse and reutilize mercury.
But are there other kinds of hazardous waste which has to be then once?
Absolutely. So
handed over to some other agency?
Yes, so you can say lead and all these heavy metals which are extremely difficult to process. Also, if you look at cartridges that contains carbon powder, which is again carcinogenic in nature. So what happens is every electronic device and every nature of electronic device has got its own nuance. As a recycler, what we have to do is ensure that the hazardous component is being looked after first and then after that what can be recyclable is recycled. So what we primarily do is when we get, say, CRT monitors, laptops, tube lights, etc., we categorize it into different components. First and foremost, say, what is the metal content and what is the recyclable components in it. The hazardous, like rightly said, is being categorized and is, so we have options there as well. So India recycling, e-waste recycling is still at a nascent stage. The technology is still being experimented. What is available outside India with a lot of other foreign counterparts, they work on huge volumes. We still have, like I said, only 5% is given to the formal sector. Vis-a-vis compared to a European country or maybe a state in US where 50-60% of the waste that is generated is forwarded to the formal sector. So once we receive this material, it is identified as different components and then it is again reprocessed. So again, a very critical thing about e-waste recycling is also data. So I mean, all these years as a country we had very poor data norms. If you look at, for example, if electronic waste is being disposed of from a premier institute like TIFR, it is important that it is processed, the data is destroyed first. Otherwise, where it lands up, you never know. So this is a very important service element from a recycling perspective as well. Tube light recycling. So this is the kind of recovery that we get once we receive electronic waste based on the current technologies. In fact, I was again having an interesting chat is if you look at in the Indian context, there is still a lot of opportunity to experiment. And so we are actually working with a couple of institutes where we are trying to work out our own technology where we can recycle copper, gold, silver from motherboards. It is available globally, but at the same time we are trying to work out on our own innovation and we'll have a patented ourselves. So this is the kind of composition from an electronic device. 23% plastic, 32% steel, 10% aluminium, 7% copper, PCB 12% and glass 15%. So if you also categorize electronic waste as home appliances, IT products and telecom, the nature of these metal and glass will vary. So typically home appliances you'll find a lot of steel. Typical telecom equipment you'll find a lot of other lighter metals. So what has happened is in the last so many years, there are so many innovations happening around, and I think I can also, I'm very glad to also share that in terms of the recycling and the product innovation phase also, there is a lot happening. So if you look at on the recycling front, there is biomining that has been experimenting, and I think it is already successfully happening in small pockets in many places. What it basically means is use of microorganisms to recycle and to extract metal from ore. So if you look at the entire mining activity, there's a lot of chemicals that are used and it also gives out a lot of hazards to the environment as well. Now biomining is something where you use microbes which eat up all the ore and the excreta is pure metal. So this has been experimenting and in small parts it's been also been done successfully, though a lot of data is not available on this. I think a very interesting thing also which will define the future is, so in the waste management jargon or in the waste management parlance, there's something called as a polluter's pay. The fact that hazardous substances are used in the first place to manufacture a particular device in itself is a crime, which is where globally a lot of activists and a lot of groups have come forward, coming together and which are propagating that products inherently should be made eco-friendly. So there should not be any need for recycling. So there is a very interesting case study that happened about Apple a couple of years back. The first lot of Apple phones were intact. So it was Steve Jobs' vision that, you know, he didn't want anybody to be able to fiddle with his iPhone. So as a result of which, those phones were not eco-friendly. The minute you would put it in a machinery, it would break down because you couldn't open and remove the battery. Now battery is extremely hazardous. So the minute you put it in the machinery, it would blow. But as of now, if you look at most of the iPhones, it has been made to suit this recycling pattern. So now onwards, most of the products that will be manufactured in the first place has to meet the recycling norms. So there's a global shift also that is happening. A very interesting thing that we'll see, and I think this project will be launched probably in this year, is phone blocks.
Every day we throw away millions of electronic devices because they get old and become worn out. but usually it's only one of the components that causes the problem. The rest of the device works fine, but is needlessly thrown away. Simply because electronic devices are not designed to last. This makes electronic waste one of the fastest growing waste streams in the world, and our phone is one of the biggest causes. So this is a new kind of phone. It's made of blocks. Detachable blocks. They are all connected to the base. And the base connects everything together. Electrical signals are transferred through the pins. And two small screws lock everything in place. So if, for instance, your phone is getting a little slow, you can just upgrade the block that affects the speed. Or if something breaks, you can easily replace it with a new one, or update it with the latest version. Another great thing about this is, you can customize your phone. So let's say this is your phone, and you do everything in the cloud. Why not replace your storage block for a bigger battery block? If you're like this guy and love to take pictures, why not upgrade your camera? Or if you don't care about any of this stuff, you can keep it simple, and get a bigger speaker. You can choose the blocks you want, support the brands you like, or even develop your own blocks. PhoneBlox is built on an open platform where companies work together to create the best phone in the world. To set up this platform, we need to get the right companies and the right people involved. They will only get started if there is a lot of interest in a phone worth keeping. So
these are the kind of innovations that we'll see in the years to come. First foremost, I think globally, it was in 2007 when the Basel Convention happened and the transboundary movement of hazardous waste was restricted, where as a country we also started realizing that electronic waste is a hazardous stream. Because all these years, a piece of electronic device or a mobile phone sitting in your pocket, you never thought that it could possibly harm the environment. So if you look at in the next couple of years to come, from manufacturing, how ensuring that only eco-friendly products are being manufactured, or if products are manufactured, it has to be recyclable at the end of the life, to bio-mining and to a major shift in waste management is what we'll see in the next couple of years to come. So that's about it. Keep recycling. Yes. Thank you. So happy to take any questions. Correct.
How much of that is indigenous and how much is it like you have to import and
So if you look at, if I have to break down the entire technology, the first thing is sorting, then there is shredding, then there is metallurgy, etc. So if you look at the first two processes is more in-house, is because primarily of the nature of feed and also because of the ability as well, where you can get people involved in sorting and the latter part of it is where we have sourced it from outside. But have been said that like the electrolysis and the copper smelting, etc. But have been said that we are also trying to work on this unique method, like I said, which will cater to the feedstock. So to put it simply, if you look at the business aspect of it, electronic waste is the feedstock. And what we process and what we get out is where and as an organization churns out. So that's what I said. The first two part is where, you know, it's in-house. The second is where we've imported machinery from outside. But having said that, you will see a lot of development in the latter part also, where we will be able to do our own recovery from boards. So we are also tied up with a company called Mitsui, which is a $50 billion Japanese group. So if you look at the last 15-20 years, a lot of progress have been made by these large smelters in terms of recovery of metal from electronics, say a PCB. And if you look at a country like India, because of the lack of material or the smaller quantities of material, we've not been able to progress a lot. But in the next couple of years, that will change drastically.
Okay, so connect,
you said.
Yeah.
So if you look at India, in fact, 2011 is when e-waste rules were notified, which makes electronic waste recycling mandatory. So at least there is a document from the government saying that all major stakeholders, bulk consumers, have to give electronic waste to the authorized people. So we are license holders. So larger companies, etc., like for example, Tata and Aditya Birla's and most of the IT companies, multinational companies, we pick it up from them. So we have contracts with them where they are also, it is an obligation for them also to give it to an authorized recycler.
How to reach to home? Like, I just can't figure out how to do it.
So you know, this is a business case. So for example, if you are a Coca-Cola, the first and foremost things you will start doing is selling it to canteens, selling it to larger companies. To reach a particular panwala, you need a distribution network. So we are building that. Hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll come up with a technology solution where you can just log in an app, say I click a picture and say this is the electronic waste I want to dispose of. One of our guys will come to your place and we'll pick it up. So we'll bridge that gap. So that is another model that has been worked on, but there is so much of forward logistic that happens there, selling that happens there. So also, you know, we are such a jugadu country. I remember the story that my friend of mine was telling me. He started this thing, free boot polish at railway station 2 years back. So he set up this free boot polish machines at all the railway station. Next day morning he went there and it was all not there. So with electronics, for example, if I were to put a phone in a particular bin at a particular location, the monitoring and security is a key role that has to be taken care of. So to be able to work out in all of these things with larger malls and with larger stores like a Croma, etc., it is being experimented, but to make it available to all the retail outlets, that will be a challenge. It's because once you have enough electronic in a particular bin, then it also becomes a target to theft. So we've done that, and all we realized is that it was all gone in a particular day. Correct. So currently what we're doing is there's a treatment storage disposal facility that is set up in all major cities.
We cannot recycle
anymore. We can. So we are working on that technology where we'll be able to recover mercury and we can reuse it. So glass, mercury can be reused. Can be extracted.
What about the glass?
Glass, currently we're giving it to a glass treatment facility where also we are trying to experiment where what can be done further. So each of this particular equipment has got such enormous potential to be studied further and to be recycled and what can be done with it.
So what are you doing now? Are you recycling it or just
going
somewhere?
We give it to an authorized government agency.
What do you do?
They treat it further.
No, you are talking about glass or mercury?
No, no, the tube like glass.
I know, but now it's broken into, let us say, aluminum, glass and
the mercury.
He said mercury he supplies to a government.
So there is a treatment, storage, disposal facility. So for example, if you are a shirt manufacturer, in the process you would also give out some hazardous substances. So the government has set up these shops where whatever you cannot process it internally, you can give it to them where you pay. So we'll end up paying where it is a hazardous substances generated by our facility and we give it to them. Parallelly, like I said, we are also working to see that how can it be reused. So they are also governed by agencies. So for example, they would have an incineration facility. They would have different other washing mechanism, etc. And so they are being monitored thoroughly.
It's not recycled.
It's not recycled. Yeah.
And the other question is PCBs. Can you recover metal from
Yes, the yes. Very much.
Yeah.
We are going to extract heavy metals out of it? Yes. We are extracting copper to some extent. And right now, like I said, we are also have a tie-up with a Japanese company where also we have the option to send it to them and they can extract 99% of all metals out of it. So I think you should come on this side. So currently, yeah. Yes. So to recycle, if I were to manufacture virgin material of any metal, for example, and if I were to recycle, the energy cost is 1/4. So it is always better to recycle, and it's a global study that any material, lead for example. So we are talking about lead. So I think a very interesting thing that we were chatting. So lead is another metal where recycling works fantastically well. So Exide is a very famous car battery manufacturing brand. They have their own recycling units where once the batteries are disposed by individuals like you and me, the batteries are again taken back and the same lead is again reused, which is 99% reusable. Apart from the plastic body and different other things, 99% of the product is reused and again done there.
Hello.
That there is some equipment which is, you know, belongs to other countries and they are brought into India and then
correct.
Now, similar things on non-hazardous waste, like nuclear waste, is not actually transported across international borders. In fact, we had a problem of our Tarapur reactors nuclear waste, which was supposed to be taken back, but it was not taken back for good reasons. So, similarly, is there some sort of an international protocol as to how this, you know, to be recycled or waste material across borders are transported and taken care of? That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two question is, where all these things which are hazardous, there isn't any kind of marking on the products as to how, if these were manufactured, whether they're manufactured in hazardous processes or in what would happen as far as recycling things are, recycling scenarios are concerned. But there are, for, you know, other products, there are some
guidelines,
such, you know, either advertisement or markings or generally known set of procedures. So how come this is not
correct? So I think so the first question was the transboundary movement of hazardous waste. I say this word fortunately, that the last 10 years we have started identifying what is hazardous and non-hazardous. So like I said, for all these years we never looked at electronic waste as hazardous. It was, I think, in 2007 that the Basel Convention happened, and there was, it's a treaty, international treaty, where globally countries accepted that the transboundary movement of hazardous waste will not happen. For that, first thing is you have to identify what is hazardous and non-hazardous. On a day-to-day basis, we consume a lot of these things. The only sensitivity will come when there is an understanding and there is knowledge about what is the composition of a particular product. So globally, there is a thing. In India, we have there is a ban on import of electronic waste, although it is still prevalent. So all these years, India was like a dumping ground. Whatever was generated by the Western countries used to get dumped here because of economies of scale and because it was cheaper. It was much more expensive for them to recycle it there rather than bearing the transportation cost and sending it here. Even today, it happens illegally, but globally there is identification of A, what is hazardous. There is a list that the government of India has identified, because of which the import and export has been restricted. So electronic waste comes under the restricted list. So import of electronic waste is banned now. So anybody cannot procure electronic waste within the country. Does that answer the first question?
Can I just have a small part to that? I think a lot of the electronic waste earlier used to come under the guise of donating, you know, computers.
It still happens.
I was part of several drives when I was in the US to collect computers for poor schools and things like that. And around that time, there was actually a big problem because they realized that a lot of this was just a guise under which they were dumping electronic waste. So we had to go through a lot more rigorous protocol to identify that these units are actually working and can be used. So this was happening. And then, of course, I think, as you said, probably a lot of illegal import of these things happened. But now we are generating enough of our own in the country as well.
So if you look at the legislation, so the good and bad about it is that it is not black and white, which is where a lot of people get to play around with it. So like you said, you know, in terms of donation, also if as a company you obtain electronic goods in guise of refurbishment, you would say that I'm a repair shop. I would repair it and then I would again help my country where people can get access to electronic goods which otherwise they would not have got. So again, it's a part, how do you play with legislation, but I'm very
glad.
Refurbish iPhones.
We have banned on second on electronics imports.
So again, recycling, the minute you say that electronic goods have been imported for recycling, it is banned. It's because it automatically becomes hazardous. But then like there are ways to work around it. It's still happening, but having said that, like I was just coming to that, fortunately the influx of electronic goods has reduced drastically in the last couple of years. So that is a good sign. And coming to the second question, like you said about why is, I think like you rightly pointed out, there are still no regulations around that what are the minimums or what are the guidelines about manufacturing an electronic product. Primary reason there is also because if you look at the electronic industry, it's a business case. It is such a huge industry and the lobby of electronic manufacturers is a very big thing. So if I as a manufacturer, if I have to introduce technological changes and if I have to make phones that the which is eco-friendly and accepts the market, it's a very big investment and it's a very slow cycle. Now, if you look at the kind of sales that they make in a particular day or a particular month, it will directly impact their top line. It is being there, like slowly, steadily, I think all the booklets of new phones will say that it should not be disposed of, it should be given to the right way. The WEEE global rules are also being included as a text in those things. But I think very soon we'll start having norms for electronic manufacturers that these are the guidelines, a product has to be made which will meet these guidelines to make it more eco-friendly. But like I said, it's a very big lobby and there is such a strong case that they put in front of any government of any country. So for to force them also to make these changes, it will take time.
Said that electronic things are not meant to last long.
Yeah.
This is sort of way things work, but why is that so? It should be so. People should be able to, their company should invest in making
it. So I think
there is a possibility so that you will keep using the same gadget.
So I think there was a time where a Sony TV would last 10-15 years and would be there intact. But I think again, you know, we are...
That is a movement or some pressure group to make the reliable and
so,
less.
So, you know, in fact, I was again having a very similar conversation that from a consumer to an entrepreneur to an environment activist, all of this, it's such a great evolution. If you look at it, it's such an open market. Like for example, even if somebody say McDonald's burger, I think it's the worst product that is available, but there are people who still buy it willingly. So there is a product and there is a consumer. When there is a pull and push factor, it's a free economy. You can go and buy it yourself. The reason they make such cheap products which they don't want to last is to increase sales, is so that they can keep selling and selling. So if you as my consumer, you buy once from me and you are satisfied for the next 10 years, that's a bad scenario for me. I will not grow. So I think it is why these companies, and I think we are living in extreme consumerism phase and extreme capitalism. That's the reason also designs change, patterns change, even the technology innovation is also to induce the customer to keep buying more and more and more. And at the end of the day, it is free will. So if I have a consumer, if I can buy and if I have the ability, the resources to buy 10 products, I don't think anybody can stop me. Like even if there are environmentalist activists, I think so it is such a thin line and I think it's a very beautiful paradox that how it is a free economy, how as a consumer I should get my choice and at the same time how there should be an overall framework and a guideline, not enforcing, but just telling us that, okay, what is right, what is not right.
Yeah.
So, it seems that currently within the Indian context, the collection is a big challenge.
Yes.
And you already pointed out there is the unorganized sector which has already been doing. So, is there any effort from companies like yours to actually connect with the...
Yes.
Because, I mean, just last week, the Kavadiwala came to my house for papers and then he asked me, do you have old laptops, you have other electronics. He was happy to take all of them.
Correct.
And you know, of course I said no. But this looks like now they're actually even asking for it. So clearly, maybe are they considering you as a competitor, which would be a bad thing, or is there some effort for you guys to work together?
So you know, when the malls came, the immediate threat was the mom and pop stores would close down. But that did not happen. They both coexisted. It's because of the space that they operate in. If you look at a Kabadiwala, like I said, you know, we have a phenomenal recycling system. very low. Service is very prompt. Like for example, if my mother had to dispose of something for all these years, paper vagera niche ek raddi wala, etc. So this will coexist. The reason, so we have also trying a lot where we can educate them. We have a lot of training programs. But also one has to understand that it's a very cash rich model. The local scrap dealers, they work on a daily wages basis. So the money that they, the material that they take, they sell it immediately. They are in fact much wealthier than all of us put together. So if we tell them that work with us, they said, let me hire you. So, but it's a, but it's a very interesting space. But then wherever required and wherever there is a group that needs our support, we do training programs and we try to educate them. Like there was this video which was of Silampur. So, I mean, I've traveled to all these remote places, Dharavi, Silampur, which is actually where, you know, they have acid baths and children sit and they do all those things, which is where we try to educate them. I said, you know, fair enough, it is your profession, you keep doing it, etc. But these are the kind of things that you should avoid. Because over a period of time, in a span of 10 years, forget the environment, but even the people who are involved, it harms them a lot. Their respiratory organs and neurosystem, it affects them a lot. So there are 100 registered with the government, and out of which you can say there must be 10 or 12 which are active and professionally run. So again, there are people who saw this opportunity, they have set up a shop, so they are in the gestation period. So for example, you know, if you're a Tata Motors, you will say, okay, let me go and get into some other industry as well, where you would be number one in a particular industry, but you would also have presence in three other industry. Say Reliance Industries also in telecom, similarly. So there are business groups who have also set up interest in this particular industry.
Just taking on that, there are also cases where, successful cases where major companies producing electronics also have on their own set up the chain and also
yes.
The industry wherein, like you told about exact battery.
Correct, so Panasonic is doing really well. And I think in Japan especially, I think they are doing where they are very proactive. And you will be surprised, there are brands who are very responsible back in US. And but when it comes to India, so they are also very, apna hi country hai, karo jo karna hai.
Like people crossing while the red
yes.
Light is on in
correct.
India, but they take care of India.
Yes.
So like HP's toner cartridges, they come with a
they
package,
come.
You can mail it back.
That's
yeah.
Right.
And you actually get the same packaging here, but there's no address to...
Yes.
Now
they attack some.
But you know, one more.
Like you can contact these numbers and they will.
But.
Not numbers.
But that was a great marketing strategy. The thing behind that is you would buy an HP printer, but every time you need a new cartridge, you would go to a local guy for refilling. So to eradicate that, they said, okay, give it to me and then buy a new one for me. So, you know, I think, like I said, it is. Such a complex scenario at the same time, you know, that's how it is, you know, these larger companies away. Also, recycling has also become a selling proposition for many. Like HP in particular, their market share was dying. And as a company, they were in deep trouble when is where they came up with a global recycling campaign.
Yeah, I think that has become a refilling.
Yes, because again, India, Jugadu Maru market, you know, you have these injections, very easily you can fill your cartridge. So copper, like I said, we have a copper furnace. Once we get copper wires, the insulation is removed. We smelt our own copper. What comes out of us is fresh copper, 99%.
So
we can sell it in the market or we can again give it to large copper consolidators who can then buy and sell it again in the market.
So in terms of volume or economics, how much of this is actually recycling?
In our facility currently, you can say 60 to 70% we can do it in-house. So nothing is thrown away. Everything is
versus proper treatment.
Yeah. So everything is processed. So that is where a recycler comes in place. So for example, we have done close to 1,000 tons of electronic waste. Each and every 1,000 ton, each and every kilo of those 1,000 ton has been further channelized. So either we do it in-house or we have a third party whom we give it to. And then again it is introduced in the market. Apart from the mercury, etc., which is 2%, so you can say 98% is recycled.
Oh,
yeah.
Is there incentive from the government for this?
So there are subsidies, but if we apply for it, then I think I'll have to wait another 10-15 years. We've grown faster, not going through that route.
Can we take one from you?
you're presenting, the thoughts coming into my mind, you know, maybe it's not practical, but I think it becomes a responsibility of both the manufacturer and the consumers whenever there's a product. And it needs to be recycled, certainly, whether it's electronic goods or car industry or. So can there should be, I mean, there should be thought that maybe the out of the profit, some fraction has to be towards the recycling cost itself, cost. And there should be some kind of, you know, in the process of recollection. I mean, suppose I buy a Sony TV at the end of 5 years, 6 years, if I paid the, you know, recycling cost by purchasing this, the company should buy back from me whether that, you know, profit will also be taken so that, you know, it's properly recycled with a very structured way of doing it. And the manufacturer would know very clearly that what are the hazardous material used, how can taken care of. So we, for that kind of system, we need a very structured recycling system in the country.
Correct.
I think something of that kind has to be done. And the other thing which was under discussion regarding the unorganized sector, and they are very efficiently functioning.
Yes.
Correct. Bottles and people.
Correct.
You see in the platform all the plastic bottles have been collected. Time by this practice. So maybe there should be some incentive to these people once they come. You know, they finally is sort of a broker. They just sell out to somebody else, and we have seen the fate of those product in the video that you presented earlier. So I think if certain cost has been put, the consumer will also become responsible. And, you know,
very true.
Maybe do that. I know some of the things have been practiced like that.
No, I think it's a very valid point. So the first part that you suggested is there has to be a mechanism to charge the customer front. So there are countries where an advanced recycling fee is charged. So for example, a particular electronic device, the cost is, or the MRP is $10. They would charge $11. $1 is an advanced recycling fee, which would be collected towards an advanced recycling fund. Once you as a consumer, you want to dispose of, the company will use that fund to recycle it. Now, the reason they need a fund is also because recycling is a cost. Now, coming to the Indian context, unfortunately, for example, even if it is individuals like us or if there is a company, so if there is an organization, say for example, an institute like this, there is purchases, there are overheads, and then there is revenue. So all these years, scrap has been a revenue for us. Like even as individuals, every time we want to dispose of, kitna bega? Like, you know, the Maruti Suzuki ad has captured it so well, the Indian mentality that, you know, kitna deti hai. So similarly, we have been a very price sensitive market, which is fair. So when you dispose of electronics, the first foremost thing is, what is the kind of money that I'll get? Because it's your hard earned money that you have put, which is also fair, is because if you look at the OLX model, you want to sell something, there is somebody who's ready to buy, there is a price that you and him discuss, absolutely fair. But in all of this, the process gets diluted. Even at a country level, unfortunately, we don't have strong governance, where the government of India or the Ministry of Environment and Forest or the Pollution Control Board comes and puts a foot down and say that, so for a recycling company like me, it's a cost. If you look at the same business, the way it is done outside, it is charged. But here, the minute we go to corporate, it's like, kitna, what is the kind of money that we'll get? Now, things are changing is because of the legislation becoming stronger, but we are still far off from that. So till the time that governance comes in, where we have the government body who comes down and says that it will be penalized. See, today the reason is you can get away with a murder, rape or etc. anything is because you know that the process is weak. The minute the process is strong is where fear will come in, and which is where processes will be followed.
So this cost factor will be taken care of by the, you know, the recycling cost that you put in there.
Correct.
So, you know, the kind of incentive that a reprocessing company expect.
Correct. And coming to the scrap dealer, like you rightly said that, and also it's a big community now, and I think it is not only us, there are some other recyclers also who have come out. There are some great young entrepreneurs who are coming around trying to educate them. So I think we are making progress, though it is slow, but I think we are also progressing on that front. But India is also introducing, in our last EVS tours, we have also introduced a very similar mechanism like an advanced recycling fee. It is just to be seen that how do we implement it and how it is enforced.
How much it costs to process it?
So companies, like I said, when we usually pick up, we land up paying because the volume, etc. So it's a part of a very different thing. It also depends upon the nature of material. And it is what is the total quantity that comes, etc. We charge them for a lot of things. So it is a part of their overall obligation. So it's very different case to case basis. What is the logistic cost involved? So for example, we have a Pan India logistic network. If you are, say for example, a Tata Motors in Pune, so we can pick it up. So it is case to case basis, what is the kind of nature of waste that you generate, etc. So tube light, cartridges, we charge. Other heavy metals, we charge. So on and so forth.
So the cost of all this should also be built into the recycling costs that you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
If you are,
no, so ideally, so we don't advance charge it. The, at the time of selling,
if our country, if our society, or the manufacturers, we agreement with recycling industry, does this kind of thing. So that also has to be integrated into.
So the ideal scenario is, I'm a Panasonic, I will sell, I'm an OEM, original electric equipment manufacturer, I'm selling material, I'm selling a printer, I'm selling a projector. At the time of selling, I take a fee that I am building on my own, I am saving it. When the consumer says I want to recycle it, I take the equipment, I give it to the recycler, I pay the recycler from the same money. So this is the ideal scenario. So we are just somewhere in the middle of all of these. So in the ideal scenario, the producer is the one who should be responsible to take the material back and should also be responsible. So I use this word, let the polluters pay. It is the companies who are producing these material which contains hazardous substances, they should be the ones who will be responsible to do this entire activity. Great. Last question.
Cecily, I mean, since you, okay, this is maybe at least the people that are in the colony, maybe it will be helpful. So you have a plan where how you want to get engaged with Ecocentric in terms of organizing things in the colony. Want to share a minute on that?
Okay. The thought has been that one day, perhaps next weekend, they could come and pick up e-waste that people collect in their homes, and on the basis of what we have collected, they will charge us or give us something back. But we have talked to them and found that probably the cost and the payment would neutralize,
even out,
because we have so many hazardous things like tube lights and
computers.
So we don't have any other option except to put them in the TIFR dumping ground, and we don't even know where they go after that. If anybody here has any idea, I hear that these things go to scrap dealers, so probably they pollute the environment. So we need a place, we need someone to collect them. We can discuss further.
Yeah. So in fact, you had some waste, no? You can 22nd or 21st, I think, once we finalize on something, I think. So we've been doing a lot with societies where we give them an opportunity that, you know, whatever they collect, they can give it. So looking forward to see you then. You had some electronic waste, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So
great.
On this, let us formally thank speaker for
nice. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Just a small announcement. Wonderilla, the Marquez want to convey. So, I think there is a program at 6:30 in the auditorium foyer celebrating the famous painter Guy Tonde. I think there are paintings, we have a collection of these paintings are going to be, they are displayed at 6:30, that's what the program says. But I think